Let's sing a song about New Jersey, liberty's torch, the immigrant gate. A place to know, a place to grow, a place we call the Garden State. The yellow goldfinch and his mate make their nest in the Garden State. Horses on the farms, horses at the gate, they work and race in the Garden State. The honeybee's job is to pollinate the beautiful plants of the Garden State. So the violet flower can permeate the fields and trails of the Garden State. New Jersey, that's my home, New Jersey. Love to roam, sweet as a honeycomb. Shines like polished chrome, New Jersey. The Garden State, the fields and farms, fill my plate, New Jersey. That's my home. Seafood lovers appreciate the oysters and clams of the Garden State. If you love brook trout, grab some bait. You can catch them in the waters of the Garden State. The knobwhelk shell reverberates with the sound of the shore at the Garden State. The saltwater taffy makes me salivate while strolling the boardwalks of the Garden State. New Jersey, that's my home, New Jersey. Love to roam, sweet as a honeycomb. Shines like polished chrome, New Jersey. Garden State, the fields and farms fill my plate. New Jersey, that's my home. Scientists and researchers innovate new inventions in the Garden State. Thomas Edison worked to illuminate the whole wide world in the Garden State. Factories and mills, they operate to make us stuff in the Garden State. And Campbell Soup, who makes V8, started with tomato in the Garden State. New Jersey, that's my home, New Jersey. Love to roam, sweet as a honeycomb. Shines like polished chrome, New Jersey. The Garden State, the fields and farms fill my plate, New Jersey. That's my home. Statue of Liberty, a red oak tree, blueberries, tomatoes, cranberries, M&M Band-Aids created here. The shore, the beaches, amusement pier, Lenae, Lenape, they lived all around. Washington slept in Morristown. The Haddonfield Hadrosaurus ate Cretaceous vegetation in the Garden State. Baseball started to captivate in 1846 in the Garden State. The Rutgers of Princeton, they made the first date to play football in the Garden State. Elizabeth White did cultivate and sell blueberries in the Garden State. The stadiums now reverberate when Springsteen sings in the Garden State. And all cars have a license plate, and most of them say the Garden State. When I go through the pearly gates, I hope it's just like
the Garden State.
Welcome back, everyone. WIBG 398-1020, the Welcome Home Show. My name is Joe Griffies. I'm here with my partners, Bill Davenport, Logan Runyon. And, Bill, we got a Christmas show, but with a lot of superstar people on our show today. And I'd like to read something before we start. And it says, Navy Rugby Hall of Fame, a memorandum. JC grew up playing rugby in San Jose, California. Following graduation, he served as an intelligence officer for 7 years. Jason played the number 8 position and was captain of the 1994 team, leading them to the national championship game. He was selected as a 2-time All-American and went on to play for the U.S. combined service team and professionally in Europe. It is Bill's honor and my honor and Logan's honor to introduce the first gentleman, Jason, the husband of our great friend of our radio show and personally a good friend of ours, Governor Mikey Sherrill, the first Democratic governor in the history of one of the original 13 colonies. So, sir, welcome to our show.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for that that wonderful introduction. I do appreciate it.
How are you doing, sir?
I'm wonderful. I'm wonderful. Thank you for having me on.
And congratulations. You know, don't take this personal, but we really love your wife. I mean,
Well, I do too. So I'm more than happy to share her. I think, you know, she's fantastic, and I love it when people get to know her and get to know just how great she is.
It's definitely a ball of energy.
And, sir, before we get on the air, what should we call you? First gentleman?
Oh, you could just call me. You can call me Jason. You know, I guess that official title, First Gentleman, I like it because it sets a high bar that I feel I need to live up to. But, you know, Jason is probably what's always easiest.
Yeah, we should be ready to get going in a minute. And know what's amazing about you? You played on the national rugby team.
Yeah, that sport was great to me. I you know, I played for a long time, and I was lucky to play at a fairly high level, but yeah, I love it.
Justin, how do you watch football? Football's such a wimpy sport compared to rugby.
Well, you know, I played a lot of football, too, and it's different. Rugby, you know, you break fingers and you get a lot of stitches. But football, those were the big injuries, right? Those were the blown-out knees. So I would never say that football is wimpy in comparison, but there is something about not wearing any pads that, you know, it's a different kind of toughness.
Jason, this is Bill. How did you get started with rugby?
You know, so I grew up in California in the Bay Area, and there was a large Pacific Islander community, and that's a very popular sport in Fiji, Tonga, Samoa. And so my high school football coach had actually played rugby, so we had kind of a high school age league. So we played all through high school. It was great. And then when I went to the Naval Academy, I was originally there for football, but I realized pretty quickly that, you know, the academic rigor at the academy, the military requirements, and a Division I football sport was a pretty tough combination. So I pivoted to rugby at the Naval Academy, which was a club sport at the time. So it was just, it ended up being a great decision. It was hard to leave football, but that's kind of, you know, my rugby foundation and career kind of started there.
That's very interesting.
You know, my best friend, one of my best friends, Ronnie Hall, he went to Penn State. True story, he went to Penn State. And he took the least amount of courses because you could play rugby up until you graduated. And if it took you 8 years to graduate, you could play rugby for 8 years. He went to Penn State to play rugby. And he came back bruised and beat up and banged up in Sea Isle. I don't know if you've ever been to it, but they hold one of the largest rugby tournaments in the summer down here in Sea Isle, New Jersey. And they play round robin over the weekend. Just games after games after games. I don't know for that.
You know, I know of the Sea Isle tournament. I've never been there, but it's a great sport. And, you know, Penn State had a legendary program. They were one of our arch rivals when I was at the Naval Academy. They still, every year, you know, put together a great squad. And, you know, it's one of those sports that, you know, a lot of people that grew up playing football and baseball and basketball, they get to college and maybe, you know, they're not going to play in college, but they're athletes, and a lot of them find their way to the rugby field, which is great. You know, they take all comers, and, you know, it's a wonderful way to make, you know, 14 new friends as soon as you join a team.
And, Jason, let me introduce you to Bill Davenport. Bill's a Marine Vietnam veteran. I think, Bill, why don't you tell Jason who your daughter is?
Well, my daughter, thanks to your wife, will be the next Attorney General for New Jersey. Her name is Jennifer Davenport.
Yeah, you know, I was told that, and I haven't met Jen yet, but Mikey is over the moon about her and her qualifications. And the response from everybody across the spectrum in New Jersey has been, you know, wonderful. Like, I think Mikey is getting, you know, a lot of credit for just the fact that Jen has done such a good job. And so, yeah, congratulations to you, sir, for raising such a wonderful daughter. And I'm glad that she's going to be part of that team.
Yeah, and she's very happy that with the team also. And she has some experience there. And she's prepared herself for the job, so she's not going to let Mikey or the state of New Jersey down. She'll do well. Could you just tell us a little bit how you got started in rugby? I'm really interested in that.
Well, you caught a little bit of that in that bio. I grew up in San Jose, California, and there was a large Pacific Islander community there. So, you know, my high school, we had Samoans and Tongans, and it's a popular sport in a lot of those kind of Pacific Islander communities. So my high school football coach in the spring coached a high school rugby program. So We had a great high school program. I played all through high school. My brother played, and all the guys from the football team, we all played. And when I went to the Naval Academy, I was originally recruited for football, but the demands of, you know, the academic rigor of the Naval Academy and the military requirements, that in addition to a Division I sport was a lot. So I realized if I was going to survive at the academy, I probably needed to drop something. So I stopped football, but I was able to pick up rugby, which was a club sport, and it was great. I played all through the academy, and then I played with the combined services afterwards, and I did play a bit professionally in England while I was still in the Navy. So I played rugby till I was about 30, and then it was finally time to hang up the boots.
You knew when it was time, huh?
Yeah, well, I've got some friends that still play, especially a lot of friends from the military, that are trying to get me to play in these over-50s tournaments. I haven't done it yet, but I'm tempted, so we'll see.
Now, when you say rugby at the academy, was it a Division I sport or was it a club?
So at that time, it was pretty much just a club sport across the nation. Cal Berkeley, who's the team that beat us in the national championship, they were the only varsity program. It's since gone varsity at a lot of schools. So the Naval Academy now has a varsity program. They're ranked number one in the nation right now, and they won the national championship for the first time a couple of years ago. So it's great to see it. And, you know, my oldest two kids are both at the Naval Academy. And even though they'd never played rugby growing up, they both got there and decided to play rugby, which is just, you know, wonderful. My wife and I are so proud of them for being at the Naval Academy, but then to see them picking up, you know, a sport that was so great to me, I just, I love seeing it.
And let me just give you a little my history with the Naval Academy. Of course, I've only been there to visit. I had the good honor to work with and then for two Naval Academy graduates when I was in the Marine Corps, one in the Caribbean and one in Vietnam. And they're obviously, they were a cut above our other officers. And, you know, Marine officers are pretty sharp. So they became...
Well, I always like to hear that. But I have to say, you know, we love a good rivalry. So whether it's Army, Navy, or, you know, Academy, ROTC guys. But I think anybody who elects to serve always gets my appreciation. There is something special that I love about the Naval Academy.
I just, you know, in working with them and for them, I just noticed a little bit of difference, and it was significant. And I'm always I'm a big fan of all the academies. I think they produce excellent people.
Listen, everybody, stay where you're at. We got to take a 1 minute break. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everyone. WIBG 398-1020, the Welcome Home Show. Jason, there's someone on the line I'd like you to say hello to. And before we do, she's nationally known. She's known around the world. She's globally known. But I'm sure I call her Rebecca, Governor Rebecca. Because when I first met her 8 years ago, she was running for office. We had her on our show. I couldn't remember if her name was Mikey or Mickey. So now it's good. It's easy for me. She's governor. It makes it easy. But I met her because I landed on my way home from Vietnam in Morris County. And we were treated so well. Mechanic drove us in. We thought we were going to Morristown. He bought us tickets, bought us lunch, had somebody stand guard with us and nobody would harm us because we were wearing our Vietnam veterans uniforms. We were 18. And I always say the most patriotic town in the world is Morris County. And that's where Governor Sherrill was in Congress representing that district. But I'd like to introduce you to Ann Mills Griffith. And Ann, are you with us?
Yes, I am. It's good to hear from you.
And Ann, we're on with Jason. Jason is the husband of the new governor of New Jersey. He's your first gentleman, Annapolis grad. And Jason, when I saw the governor at the meeting yesterday up in New Brunswick, she said, "Joe, Jason's going to be on tomorrow." I said, "Great." And we had Ann Mills scheduled on also at the same time. And I thought, what a great time for Ann. Would you tell Jason, who's an Annapolis grad and intelligence officer for 7 years in the Navy, who your brother Michael was?
My brother was and he was missing in action from September 21st, 1966, until he is partial remains were recovered in 2018, and he was buried at Arlington National Cemetery in 2019, the day after our National League of Families 50th annual meeting. And his recovery was largely thanks to initiatives by the government of Vietnam that located the site where the F-4, in which my brother was the radar intercept officer, was partially, you know, located in shallow water. So it was an initiative by the Vietnamese that the U.S. government then facilitated as part of our POWMI accounting program, which we started under really seriously with President Reagan in the 1980s. So that's who my brother is.
And Jason, Ann Mills is the chairperson for the National League of Families of America, Prisoner and Missing in Southeast Asia. And your brother was a Navy pilot, correct?
And Navy radar intercept officer. He was a backseater. His eyesight wasn't good enough. He wanted to be a pilot, Joe, but his eyesight wasn't good enough. So he became a radar intercept officer, and he had two tours there. The first on the USS Midway, that's now the ship in the harbor in San Diego, and the second one that he was lost from is the USS Coral Sea.
And Jason, we want to let you know from the Welcome Home Show, Bill and I, we're here to support anything that you're doing, any projects you're involved in. Of course, anything the governor is involved in, we'll be there right away for you and your family. I know personally, I am so happy that she is the governor of New Jersey, because we started out with her when she was running in a pretty tough district to win, and she showed them. And you know, we were up in New Brunswick when they had the final meeting with all the transition team members, I guess 400 or 500 in the auditorium. And when Governor Sherrill came out to speak, she looked so presidential. Don't tell her I said that. She wants to settle in by the governor first, but she looked so ripe for the job. And
yeah, I do appreciate all the support. And, you know, Ann, That's an amazing story, and I tell you, I know, Joe, that you served in Vietnam as well. One thing about when we first got to the academy is that, you know, we weren't that far from the graduates and the service members that had served in Vietnam, and, you know, we knew the scars and the wounds and what it was like for a lot of those veterans that were returning.
Yes.
And I think that appreciation for what the people who served there, you know, that was something that was drilled into us, you know, from the first day we arrived. And there is an element of never forget. And even just the repatriation of POWs and MIA, you know, that was amazing. But I think, you know, Joe, what you reckon recognize in Mikey with that leadership and ability, we're just both so lucky to have had, you know, shared the experience of some of those who served before us. And I think that's the foundation on which she leads, and it's where a lot of her integrity and character come from. So I appreciate the support you've given since day one, but honestly, I think the thanks goes to, you know, people like Ann's brother and yourself and Bill for your guys' service, because that's the path that we were following.
Listen, we're going to let you go. We promise. I'm sure you got. Does the first gentleman have to Christmas shop? You know? Listen. Can you give a message to my dear friend, your wife? She knows all much how much we appreciate her and we respect her and all. But I was sitting in about the fifth row, and I just watched her speech that she gave yesterday. And I've been down, being born and raised in Philadelphia. I've been to Independence Hall many times and walked the hallways of the Constitutional Center. And you see these giant pictures of Adams, Jefferson, Hancock, walking around in Independence Hall in that office with the green draped tablecloths and the candles and their stature, the way they looked, the way they held themselves, the way they spoke. Congresswoman Rebecca Sherrill could have fit in that picture with them. I believe that if she was born back in those days, Jason, she would have been in that room, you know, with
Adams. Yeah, thank you.
You know.
Thank you. You know, I'll leave you with one thing that I think is so amazing. So, you know, there's been just over 50 female governors in the United States in the 250 years since we were founded. Mikey is obviously the second female in New Jersey, the first Democratic female. But I think is what's amazing is she's the first female veteran to become governor. Yeah. And what a credit to New Jersey that, you know, we look for that integrity and character and service. So it's one of the things that I think is the neatest about this election.
Jason, we get two for the price of one. Because
yeah, that's right.
We get you a veteran, and Governor Sherrill a veteran. So we now have two veterans that are in Trenton. And we know we have a friend that understands. Now, Governor Murphy was good to the veterans, very good, good personal friend of Bill and mine. But Mike and you understand, you put the boots on, and that makes a difference, you know?
Yeah, thank you. I do appreciate that.
Now, can I give you an order? You got to go out and cut down.
Sir.
You got to put a tree up. Just because you're the first gentleman don't mean you don't have to put a Christmas tree up now, you know?
Oh, that tree. We put the tree up the day after Thanksgiving. I was under strict orders to have the lights on it by the end of the day.
You're like
it's
my
beautiful. I've got to send you a picture. It's
please.
Great.
And great. Would you come back on again sometime? I mean, fill us in on what's going on, and I know you're going to have a big interest in veterans and what's going on in the state of New Jersey. And
honestly, I'd love to come on anytime you want me. I think we're going to be doing a lot of exciting stuff for veterans. It's going to start with, you know, 2026 being the 250th anniversary of the American Revolution. I mean, at the heart of that is the veterans program. So anytime you guys want me back, I'd love to join.
God bless you and your four children, sir. And thank you for saying hello to Ann. Ann, stay on the line. We're going to let the first gentleman in New Jersey go, and we'll be right back after a short break. God bless you, sir.
Merry Christmas, Jason.
Thank you, and happy holidays to you all.
Thank you.
Someday at Christmas, men won't be boys, playing with bombs like kids play with toys. One warm December, our hearts will see a world where men are free. Someday at Christmas, there'll be no wars when we have learned what Christmas is for. When we have found what life's really worth, there'll be peace on earth.
Welcome back, everyone. WIBG 398-1020, the Welcome Home Show. Bill, we're very, very honored to have two great ladies. I was in a dispute this week with a person that you know about. I'm not going to mention names. And I read an article that somebody wrote and said, women deserve to be in the kitchen and have babies. And I said, oh, my God, I got to erase this before my wife reads it. And I said, I turned to Colleen. I said, look at this. I said, we have on our show today Christine Hanlon, not one of the best county clerks in New Jersey, in the country. We have Ann Mills Griffiths, founder of POWMIA, Accountability, Karen Oxford, two-star admiral, the director. This Ann, how many times have you been to Hanoi?
Oh, I don't know. I lost count at 30-something. I really can't remember. I remember the first time I was in Hanoi was 1982. But I can't remember how many times. It's been very many.
But when you're up there, and you're up there and trying to work with the Laotian government, the Chinese, the Russians, to explore more sites where American pilots during the Vietnam, Laos, Cambodian wars took place, how do they handle a woman walking in representing the United States?
Well, first of all, I never worked for the U.S. government, so I was representing the families of those who were missing in action and captured, and it was post-war. So, because of the position I was in, and because I was part of the U.S. government interagency group that developed the policy in the Reagan administration. They pay enough attention to know that it was well connected. Anything that I said was easily backed up. There was respect, and I mean, it was certainly rudimentary in many ways. But they train their people very well in advance. They educate them. So they know who they're dealing with, and they know what they're dealing with and what the policy is that they are trying to accomplish.
You know, our dear friend Ambassador Toll, when she was appointed ambassador to, and she passed away 2 weeks ago, what a great loss. And what a great woman leader in the world. When she was sent by President Clinton to be the ambassador to Brunei. She always correct. The only thing she ever corrected me on was the pronunciation of that country. And she said, when I went to the first formal dinner, I was the ambassador sitting at the end of the table. And she said, I called the maitre d' over and said, protocol is the ambassador sits next to the president of the country. They just, because she was a woman, they thought they could put her at the end of the table. So she straightened them out just like you. And any idea how many veterans that you remains at your agency's responsible for bringing home?
Well, I wouldn't say we're responsible for any of them. They were recovered, and yes, we helped build the process that President Reagan is the one that made it a priority, and we started with a very, very small U.S. government agency and effort, and it has built to a massive defense POW/MIA accounting command today that has roughly 800 employees and works worldwide. I can't say we ever brought home any. We had no capability.
I can say you. Because you've been at this for going on 60 years, you know?
Yeah,
please, I know you too well. Listen, that agency would have fell apart a long time ago if you ever left it. If you ever left it. And I challenge anybody to call and tell me. And I want to introduce you to the Monmouth County Clerk. What a great, great lady. And I have the honor of sitting as a trustee on the board of the largest Vietnam Veteran Memorial and Educational Center in Homedale, New Jersey. Christine, are you with us?
I am. So glad to be with you. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we can hear you fine. I want to introduce you to Ann Mills Griffith. Ann Mills is... It was actually Ann, your father, that really got involved and got you involved.
Yes, because my father was at the founding meeting, but that was back in 1970, before the end of the war. And then it was just a difficult time at the end of the war when the return POWs came back. And most of them were pilots and air crew members. Mostly Air Force, but also Navy and Marine Corps and a few Army that were like rescue pilots and others. But it was a different time space. I was very interested in when you were talking to the gentleman you called the first gentleman right before, and seeing that both he and his wife were active duty and he went to the Naval Academy. I mean, you could tell by the things he was saying, what the military means to him. And that's kind of what you absorb all the way through if you're working with an issue like I have been since I've been head of the league since 1978. So it is a long time, and there's over 1,000, that is 1,053, I think. Don't know exactly. It gets more and more confusing because the Defense POW/MIA agency that we built is now dealing with a much broader scope, which we supported as long as they would uphold their priority on Vietnam War accounting, which sadly has fallen quite behind where it should be.
But you know what?
What I've been doing.
Jan Scruggs was going to build the founder of the Vietnam Wall and a good friend of yours in Washington. They were going to build a And Bill, I know you know this. They were going to build an educational center behind the Vietnam Wall, but then the Park Service took the ground away from us, and they're giving it to the Iraq, Afghanistan, the Gulf War veterans. So that Christine, that now leaves the great New Jersey Homedale Vietnam Veteran Memorial as the largest educational center. Christine,
yes, and I believe the only one in the country.
Yes, Christine, wouldn't it be important
that we support the Vietnam Veterans Memorial and Museum. It's just a fascinating and special place that we have to continue to support.
Christine, wouldn't Anne love just the atmosphere there? Because Anne, not that we're taking away from other veterans or other wars, but when you walk through them doors, Christine, am I correct saying it's all about Vietnam veterans?
It truly, truly is. And it's so fascinating to walk through the museum. And one of the things I love about it, too, is that it really reflects, you know, especially for our young people who don't know the history. It really reflects, like, what was going on in the world at the time and what was going on in the war. And it has that kind of juxtaposition. And it really gives you the full breadth of what was going on at that time. And it's so important that we learn about that and we continue to educate people and our children about what happened there.
Christine, your dad is a veteran, correct?
Yes, he is. He was not a Vietnam veteran. He's a little, but he is a veteran. And, you know, unfortunately, he's deceased now, but he was so proud of his military service. We had my uncle also served in the Navy, my dad in the Army. And we're just very proud of our military family members. And I have a nephew right now who's in the Coast Guard. And so he's at school and learning, and we're really proud of him also.
Dan, I got to tell you, when I went to my first board meeting, I guess about 8 months ago there, I'm still trying to figure out why they wanted a dumb Vietnam veteran like me on their board, but there's generals, there's colonels, there's Christine was asked to run for lieutenant governor, or maybe she did run for lieutenant governor. We have Assemblyman Ora Dunn, and I'm looking around this room, the president of Billy, the president of the Carpenters Union for Seven State, all these people sitting around the Lou that was, you know, the first, we just did a documentary on their return home from Vietnam and what they did walking back from Washington. And then I look at my, and of course, Nick Assalta and Amy. And then I look.
And Frank Luna.
And right? Frank, all of them. And I pinch myself, Christine, saying, what do they want me up here for?
Oh, God. You are such a dedicated member and offer so much. And it's really a great group. And we're all, you know, working in the same direction to make sure that this place really has the recognition it deserves and, you know, is able to really promote the history and exist as a really important force in remembering.
I think maybe you might want to offer educational support to some of our government offices who do not adequately train many of those serving in countries around the world today in the history and what it really means, including those who serve in Vietnam, Laos, and Cambodia. I think it's important to educate people that are going to be serving our country, not only the language, but the history of that country and what our goals are so that they have a better basis for dealing with the foreign officials and to promote U.S. interests. So I really appreciate what you said about the educational capability of your I can't remember the name, it was long, but Joe said, but the fact that it is an educational facility about the Vietnam War and those who served there is very admirable.
And not only are we continuing to educate, Christine's a big factor in us getting grants to expand the education center up there. Anne, it's not really polite. My wife will give me hell, but I'm going to ask anyway. How many, I just asked you before to repeat a question. How many times have you been to North Vietnam sitting down with the communist countries? Roughly, what'd you say, 30, 40 times?
You Yeah, over 30. I lost count. I think it was like 35 or something. And I said, this is ridiculous.
Okay.
That is amazing.
Wait a minute, Christine. Wait to hear this. How old were you at the first time you went in?
I think 33 or 4. I can't remember exactly. I'd have to look at the date. And I know it was 1982. Well, I'm 84 now.
I was going to ask you, Christine, this hero is 84 years old.
Wow.
And you know something? I got to tell you one thing really important. When her brother Michael was found a few years ago, the water succeeded a little bit, and it was in, you could only go and search in that area a couple of weeks out of the year. They found her remains. I've been to her brother's remains in Washington and Arlington. She fights harder now. She didn't give up because they found her brother. She fights harder now.
You don't fly off of the aircraft carrier going a few hundred miles an hour over enemy territory and disappear off of radar, fully loaded with bombs that hadn't yet been dropped, and disappear and expect to ever find anything. So we never, even when my dad was for only 1 year, but he was head of the National League of Families for 1 year, and that was in 1976, I think, or five, right at the end of the war. But we didn't ever expect to get anything, and I don't think we would have if I hadn't been involved for so long in the Vietnamese. Either they decided that my family deserved it, or they decided maybe that was a way to get me out of it so they could make more money, because I was always opposed to their gouging the United States for cooperation.
Listen, I sat in rooms at the VVA down in Virginia when they were talking about POW MIAs, and I think the last time I was there, you were 10 minutes late. When you walked in the room, everything changed. They knew when you, before you pulled your chair out to sit down, they knew who was in charge. And that's just your leadership. Christine, where do you want to see the Vietnam veteran in Homedale Memorial Museum go? What's your expectation for 5 years from now, 10 years from now? What would you like to see done?
You know what? I would really like to see, number one, sustainability. Because, you know, unfortunately, the museum and memorial is not, like, consistently funded. And that is one of the things that I know our current board and our executive director, Amy, working with the state to try and get consistent funding, because it is such an important piece of our history. The other thing that I would like to see is, you know, with the consistent funding, I know we would like to expand, and can't do that without the funding. And I think, you know, even more, you know, a more robust presence, even though it's amazing the way it is right now, I know everybody would like to expand a little bit so we tell more of the history and we can bring more people in. So that's where I'd like to see it go. And I'd really like to see it as something known throughout the state. And that's one of the items that our current board is working on, our executive director, is really raising awareness, because a lot of people don't know that, number one, this is the only place in the entire country, and number two, that it's right here in New Jersey, and so easily accessible off the Garden State Parkway. And so raising the awareness is a really big part of what everyone's working on right now. And, you know,
let me ask you something, too, Christine. I'm just curious, since the National League of Families, we have an archival preservation project ongoing. And that's for our archival records from the beginning up till today. But we have a lot of things that your museum might find extremely useful and informative to those who visit that could be displayed. If you would like to have some of that material or artifacts or awards or, you know, things from all over. Then I'll work with Joe to make sure we have the right address and ability to get that.
Yeah, absolutely. And our executive director, Amy Osborne, would be the one to connect with on that. And I think that's the kind of thing that, you know, it's like part of the future and being able to, you know, house different types of collections, archive material, and present more to the public. So that's kind of, you know, part of the future goals. And I love that you're doing that. I don't know, Joe, if you know this either, but in Monmouth County, I oversee the county archive. So whenever I hear anyone archiving, I get really happy about that.
Wait a minute. Hold on a minute, Christine. Hold on a minute. You are also, your clerk's office, very, very active with veterans. You have 33,000 veterans. Bill, 33,000 veterans live in Monmouth County.
Yes.
That's a lot.
And I just will say that we have a very beautiful program for our veterans. We are empowered by law to issue a veteran's discount card and a Gold Star family card. And what we did was we reached out to all businesses throughout Monmouth County, and we developed an Honoring Our Heroes program where any veteran who comes in to get the card will also get the book that includes all of the different businesses who offer a special discount or service. And then we continue to promote this program so that more and more businesses and entities sign on to offer something special to our veterans. You know, we have millions of records that go back to the 1600s, and we preserve our historical records. I have a great team of people over there. But I love to hear about people archiving, because we don't save our past. You know, we can't learn from what has gone before. And it's so important. I even encourage people to create their own personal archive.
Oh, yeah.
Because in this world of, like, technology, like, people aren't saving things the way that they should be saved for future generations.
And Chris,
so I do encourage all that kind of archiving.
It was a fine young man, is a trained archivist. He is also our executive director, and he is
wonderful.
The one who's been largely responsible for, we have tons of archives, and because it's 50 years of effort on this issue with Vietnam, Laos, Cambodia, Thailand, and other countries in ASEAN and elsewhere, but because of that, and because of his being an archivist, it puts the two together, plus he is very, very well informed and educated in today's AI technology, communication technology, and that's going to be the way forward for the future. That's why it's a good thing that I am retiring at the end of this year. And
No, you're not.
Let me finish. I am no longer going to be the acting CEO, but I have to write my book. I promised people like General Vesey and Colin Powell and George Shultz and Rich Armitage and Rick Childress, names you know, Joe.
Yes.
And I promised I would write this book, and I was the only non-government person who participated in all this throughout the Reagan administration and since. So I have the freedom to be able to write that. And while I still can remember anything, I better get to it. So that's what I'm going to start doing in 2026, which, by the way, is the first year of our second quarter of our 21st century. So it's a pretty important time. So that's what I'm trying to do. We're trying to complete getting our archives into the George Mason University Library, which is what we decided. We were offered many places to do it, especially women's universities, because there's been so much heavy influence and participation by females because of being wives and sisters and just a lot of women involved. But we decided on George Mason because it seemed less political and not just singularly focused. So
now, listen,
we've been working with him. We just saw him this last Friday. So
we got to go.
That's wonderful.
We got to go to a break, and before I let both you ladies go, something I want to do a little bragging about, Christine. We value our Veterans Community Award by the New Jersey Department of Military Veterans Affairs. The recipient was Christine Hamlin in 2021. And, you know, your passion, Aura's passion, Amy's passion is Nick, you know, Gold Star brother. It's just so contagious when you're in that, when you're on them grounds, around those grounds. When I'm talking to you, Christine, I can feel your passion, your patriotism. The same with Ann. Bill, when you, and Christine very might much. Know, you might know Bill's daughter. Tell Christine who your daughter is, Bill.
Well, seems to be the topic of the show. She'll be the next Attorney General for the state of New Jersey, Jennifer Davenport.
Wow, good luck to her.
Do you know her, Christine?
I've never met her. I you know, I saw the appointment, and I wish her the best. I am so happy for her. I think she's a Monmouth County resident.
Yes, she is.
What I heard.
Yeah, and
Christine knows everything.
During the interviews, it came up. You know, she had to be approved by their the local senators. And I said, "Well, I'll tell you who the senator is." And no, I don't live in Cape May County anymore. She lives in Monmouth. But, so it's shocked me.
So I know our senators were on board. You know, both the Republican and Democrat in Monmouth. And I wish her well. It's a big job. But with her resume, you know, we know she can handle it.
Yeah.
So
and she's interested in history. She might stop by your office someday to do some research.
I hope she does. Mm-hmm. I hope
and
she
her
does.
Dad, Bill, here is a Vietnam veteran, Marine.
Oh, thank you for your service.
You're
listen,
right.
I'm being given dirty looks by my producer.
Okay, you got to go.
Listen,
wonderful.
Happy holidays to all of
you.
Merry Christmas.
Thank you so
Merry
much
Christmas. Christine, we love you. Ann. God bless you.
Yes,
you know I love you.
Too.
And
yes,
we,
I know. Thank
will you,
you
announce your book on our show? I'll announce it. I'll just make it up, so you better start writing it. And listen, God bless everyone. And thanks,
you too.
Thanks for
take
all your
care,
hard work.
Everyone.
We'll be right back.
Desperate for money, food, clothing, and ammunition. In early December 1776, Washington's army is falling apart. The British smell victory.
The fact is, their army is broken all to pieces, and the spirit of their leaders is all broken. I think one may venture to pronounce it is well nigh over with them, Lord Rawdon.
From a 20,000-strong army in August, only 3,500 troops are left. And with those enlistments expiring in January, Washington takes a bold gamble.
If this fails, I think the game is pretty well up, General George Washington.
He sets his sights on a daring attack at Trenton. But how to move his army across the Delaware without being detected? A crossing near McConkie's Ferry is the answer. Far enough from Trenton to escape notice, but close enough to reach the Hessians in a few hours' march. On Christmas night, 2,400 men, 18 cannon, and over 50 horses cross a treacherous, rain-swollen, ice-choked river.
It rained, hailed, snowed, and froze, and at the same time blew a perfect hurricane. John Greenwood.
Despite conditions, not one man, horse, or cannon is lost, but the operation falls hours behind schedule, and the cover of darkness is gone. But Washington and his tenacious troops have made their own luck. The Hessians, thinking no one would attack in such weather, cut short their normal scouting party. The Americans gain the advantage of surprise and drive the Hessians from Trenton, fend off 8,000 British troops, and go on to win a decisive battle at Princeton. In just 10 crucial days, from crossing the Delaware to victory at Princeton, the tide of the war has turned.
The rebel soldiers begin to have more confidence. An unnamed British colonel.
They are now become a formidable enemy. Colonel William Harcourt.
Today, at Washington Crossing State Park, you can stand where the Americans landed. Track the route to Trenton and on to Princeton. Here, and throughout New Jersey, lie the crossroads of the American Revolution.
Welcome back, everyone. WIBG 398-1020, the Welcome Home Show. Bill, have you been up to Washington Crossing?
I'm sure. I've been there, never during any of the activities there, but I've seen it. I've seen the terrain around it in the area. I've followed it a lot. I've been to the Monmouth County battlefield, which is it reminds you a lot of the when we were still doing it during the Civil War, wide open fields where troops face each other, and those who have the most left at the end win.
And whoever could load a musket ball faster,
right?
I mean, you're 10 feet away from them,
yeah.
You know, and they have, you know, the only thing as long as a musket is the knife. Yeah. What do they call it? The bayonet looks, yeah, more like a sword.
And the rifles were long, because the longer the rifle, the more distance you got with it.
And
so you want to be as far away as possible. They had no body armor, no helmets, no protection. You're in the wide open. But it's interesting to see these kind of fields.
But wait a minute, Bill. All they gave us in return for all that and not getting paid, they got screwed more than Vietnam veterans when it came to money.
They probably did.
They gave us our freedom. Yeah. And it's our honor. We have two of my heroes, two great, great ladies. We have Rear Admiral Karen Oxford, who's the director of the Michael J. Crescenz VA Medical Center in Philadelphia. And we have one, my good friend, Jennifer Martin, who is the executive director of the Friends of the Washington Crossing. She runs Washington Crossing Park. And I was on the phone with Richard Azzaro, the president of the Tomb Guard Association in Arlington. I tell Richard all the time, the two sacred grounds in the country to me, besides VA hospitals, are Arlington, Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, and Bucks County, Washington Crossing. So, Admiral Karen, welcome, and Jennifer, welcome.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you. Thanks, Joe.
Yeah. Admiral.
Yes, sir.
How big's your hospital? How many veterans visit that a year?
So we have approximately 70,000 veterans, Joe, that are enrolled, and on any given day, over 1,000 appointments at our 5 C-Box plus our main hospital, named after Michael J. Crescenz, of course.
And we just celebrated. You were down in Arlington and put flowers on Steve's grave, your husband.
I did, yes.
What was Steve's rank? He was a captain, wasn't he?
He was a Navy captain. He was a Navy physician. Benefited from, you know, grew up in a poor family in South Carolina. Was smart, worked hard, became a Navy physician, and then, you know, just was in practice for almost 40 years. So had great experience in the Navy and loved the Navy, loved veterans.
And I'm sure he just worshipped the ground you walked on, and just admired what your career was all about. Two-star admiral is, no, that's not too shabby, is it?
That's a pretty good job.
No, when I started as an ensign, no, of course not. Quite honestly, he was very proud. I was very proud of him. And so, you know, you sometimes find that right person, and I certainly did, and he was just gloriously supportive of my career. And again, Joe, you know this, you don't get to a senior rank without the great support and of your team members and people you work with. And so I have been blessed to work with extraordinary people.
And you got that with a lot of people that work at the Michael J. Crescenz VA Medical Center. You know?
I do. I've been there 6.5 years and probably one of the longest tenured directors, because those positions don't always stay full all the time. So I'm excited, because a great team. We know what we need to do. We've got to work hard every single day. If we don't work hard some days, we got to come back and work harder the next day.
And I got to tell everyone, I've called you all hours of the night, all hours of the day,
mm-hmm,
when a veteran's in crisis.
You bet.
And you're always, you don't say, Joe, it's 10 o'clock or it's 3 in the morning. You just say, do you have the family's phone number?
Right. I think it's about serving others too, Joe, and you do that so well, and you represent what that's all about. So,
and let me tell you something,
great.
Bill.
Yes,
she gets the head of psychiatry, the VA, on the hospital at midnight when we have a crisis. Yeah. You know, and that's what she does, and I think that's what makes her separate. Karen, I really believe that you would have been an excellent choice to be the secretary of the VA, because you really get it. You really,
Joe,
really
I'm good
get
where I am. Thank you, sir.
But listen, I want to
introduce.
Yeah. Well, let me know. We have ways to get people promoted.
Very good where I am.
We have a lady coming on now, who's the executive director of this other sacred ground. And listen, you're not the admiral. You're not in Philadelphia. We're not doing a radio show. if it wasn't for who this lady represents every day at Bucks County, General Washington. Jennifer, you with us?
I am, absolutely, Joe.
How are you doing? Are you at the park now, or are you at home?
No, I'm not at the park today. I do love the park, but every once in a while, you know, I do have to leave. but no, so I'm not in today, but I've spent a lot of time there the last couple weeks. You know, we just did the first crossing reenactment, and we're preparing to welcome 8,000 to 10,000 visitors on Christmas Day.
And I say this all the time, and I mean it. You can't appreciate patriotism, and you can't appreciate Christmas Day till you watch or participate the crossing of the Delaware on Christmas Day, or the full dress rehearsal I think you had last week or the week before. They do a shorter version, or I believe they used to on Christmas Day, so people can get home to their families. But Jennifer, how would you describe Christmas morning in Bucks County when you got the soldiers from the Marblehead soldiers and the soldiers from Maryland and the soldiers from Ohio and the soldiers from Philadelphia and the soldiers from Pennsylvania? They were all different regiments from all up and down the coast. They weren't a uniformed Army or Navy or Marines like we have today. They just all joined the fight for the freedom of America. And that patriotism, like a fire is going on, they're sharing their alcohol that they you know, in those days, they all carried a flask full of alcohol. I mean, the last time I was up there, 20 guys must have offered me their flask. Do you want a drink or whatever? How would you describe that morning on Bucks County waiting for the Durham boats to take the soldiers across to Trenton?
Yeah, so I would say that really for us, it's very inspiring. Like, there's something really powerful about the idea that this event that happened so long ago has not only connected so many people to the history of our country, and really just generations of visitors that have come to learn this story. The idea that we are all coming together to honor and think about the place that a lot of the freedoms we still enjoy today came from, I just think that there's something really special about it. So, you know, I've really considered it a privilege to be standing there with so many people that are still so motivated and connected to be a part of this history today, not only as visitors, but like you said, as reenactors. I mean, we have over 200 to 300 reenactors each year that will give up their Christmas or take a pause in their Christmas to spend time to be able to share this story with the next generation of proud Americans. So it's inspiring and powerful. That's definitely how I would describe it.
You know, Chris, Jennifer, I want to correct you on one thing. On that day, even during the rehearsals, they are not actors. They're 300, 400 serious men and women and children that are boarding them Durham boats to row across the river. And the last time I did it, we were 30, 40 feet from the bank. We had to get out because we couldn't get the boat. The water, we hit dry land, but we had to get out, and we were in water up to our waist. And we had to walk up the hill and wait for General Washington to dismiss us, inspect us, dismiss us. Nobody complained about the cold, the chill, wet clothes, mud. We stood there, and I couldn't complain because nobody else was complaining. And they took it serious. And I believe a lot of them reenactors, they had the same patriotism as we did in 1775, 1776 when we were fighting the war. Does that sound true to you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I would say that, you know, a lot of the people doing this, they take it really seriously. They consider it an honor to be part of this story and this legacy and to be able to share it. A lot of them, I mean, we have people that are there with their grandfather doing the reenactment, their son, their grandson. So you have multiple generations of families coming together to tell this story. And yes, being able to be part of that legacy and being able to share that within our community. And again, just taking that pause to say, hey, yes, it's Christmas, but there's a very rich history that took place here in Bucks County that had a national impact. So yes, I would say that we have a very dedicated group of individuals doing reenacting at the site.
How long have you been up working at the Bucks County? when they go out?
Yeah, so this is going to be my 12th year working at Washington Crossing Historic Park. I started there as the assistant to the executive director and the director of education, and I've been executive director since 2019. So, yeah, 12 years. It's going fast, for sure.
And I don't know if you guys recognize the voice when they were given, when we came back, instead of playing a song, we played the voice of what took place, Washington, with the 60 horses and the 18 cannons and the thousands of soldiers. That was the voice of the present General Washington, John. That's been the reenactor for probably the last 20 years. And he's also fills in Mount Vernon. He's really a good George Washington, isn't he, Jennifer?
Oh, he's fantastic. So John's been reenacting for over 30 years, actually.
Yeah.
And not only is he a fantastic reenactor, he's also president of the 5th PA, which is his regiment. But he's been portraying Washington at the park since 2009. And yeah, he's done a ton of research on Washington and his life and his, you know, the work that he did during the Revolution. He's I would consider him a subject matter expert. Very humble, he might not, but he's a fantastic portrayer of Washington.
You know, Karen and Jennifer and everyone, I had the honor of doing the Washington Crossing already. I had the honor of meeting and become a very good friend with General Washington, John, and I call him General Washington when I see him. And I also had the honor of being on a submarine for a few days under the ocean. And I always said I met three George. I know of three very popular George Washingtons in my life. Is George Washington himself. Of course, I never met him, but I read a lot about him. And of course, your General Washington, John Cazabo, if I'm saying his last name correctly, and then Steve Howe, who was the captain of the submarine. So I had the honor of crossing bodies of water and being under them with three great General Washington, his reenactors, Steve Howe, captain of the USS New Jersey sub, and, of course, General Washington, John Cazabo, up at Bucks County. Jennifer, and I'll ask Karen this. Karen, have you ever been there to Bucks County for the Washington's Crossing?
So never for the event, the activities itself. No, there to visit, yes, but I'm putting that on my list.
Do you have any clinics up in Horsham's? Not Horsham's up in that area, isn't it?
So no, Horsham is what Saraceni is, named after Victor Saraceni. That's up near Willow Grove.
Yeah.
We do have a vet center up in Bucks County,
Good.
I'm going to make a trip to both.
Jennifer, if Washington doesn't make it across that night, what do you think would be happening to Bucks County today, that area? What do you think?
It's certainly hard to say for sure what would be happening here now, but what I can say is we definitely wouldn't be the nation that we are. I mean, Washington, it's the end of the year, and the enlistments are up, and Washington needs a victory. And not only does he need a victory, he needs a strategic victory. He's been losing. He's been pushed back out of New York, back out of New Jersey. He puts this barrier between him and the enemy, and he moves into Bucks County. And the Army's been in camp for 2 weeks. And during that time, Washington's really focused on the fact that he needs a victory to convince the Army and the nation that he can still win. I mean, you're talking men that could be tried for treason for even joining this Army. So Washington will cross the Delaware, and over the next 10 days, he'll not only be victorious twice at Trenton, but he'll also be victorious in Princeton. And historians now, they look back at this time and they consider it the turning point of the Revolution. And if Washington hadn't done this, if he hadn't done the crossing and he hadn't fought these three battles, I definitely don't believe that we would be the nation that we are. We might still be a British nation. It's definitely a very important period. And that's why we're so dedicated to doing the reenactment and artillery and fife and drum and cavalry and really immersing people in some of the components of the Revolution to give them a sense of just the sacrifice and the fierce determination that Washington and his men had.
And Jen, your husband's a veteran, correct?
Oh, absolutely he is. Yep. I am a proud Air Force veteran wife. And I think that anyone who has, you know, served our country going back all the way to Washington and the men that are still serving today should be commended. Absolutely.
I was mad at a bunch of guys during the Army's birthday because they, I don't think they included Vietnam veterans in the Army's birthday for their 251st birthday. And I made it very clear that four-star General Brown and Command Sergeant Major Dan Daly, and I wrote a letter stating that I believe if George Washington was to come back alive today and somebody asked him a question of all our service, men and women are all brave, all proud, all great. They sacrificed in all wars. Who would you compare? What era of veterans would you compare to the Continental Army? And I think he would say Vietnam veterans. Because we didn't have the greatest equipment. They didn't pay us. $80 a month is not pay. We did a lot of things that most people would not do during their lifetime. And we did it with pride. And, you know, Bill, George Washington got soldiers to fight in the winter, in the snow, going across a frozen pond, a river. And, by the way, they hadn't been paid for months.
And in those days, communications wasn't the same, so they didn't know how their families were faring.
We're going to go to a little break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to the Welcome Home Show. Welcome back, everyone. WIBG 398-1020, the Welcome Home Show. Jennifer, you've been a friend of mine a long time, and you made a quote to me the other day. You said, Joe, I asked you if you're ever going to get involved in politics. And you said, Joe, I love my job. It demands a lot of me, but I have to uphold the legacy of General Washington and Judge Colonel Larry Rubini. Tell everybody who our friend Larry Rubini was.
Yeah, so Larry Rubini was really just a fantastic volunteer and leader within our organization. I considered Larry a mentor. Like I said, I served at the park for 12 years, and Larry had been there the whole time I was there. And he played really like a strong leadership role in not only coordinating the crossing reenactment, but also our Memorial Day ceremony, which is a fantastic event where we honor the earliest, you know, these early veterans of our nation. And, I mean, Larry was a fantastic storyteller, educator, really active within our community, just a fantastic patriot and supporter of our site. And, yes, he was, I know he was a good friend of yours, Joe. He always spoke very highly of you.
And he was a judge, 30-year colonel, went to Iraq and helped with 80 nations, 80 interpreters and lawyers and all from all over the world to help write the, he was one of the senior writers of the Iraq's first constitution. And I am hosting a ceremony to dedicate the Washington Mills Bridge on Worthington Mills Road in honor of Colonel Daniel Larry Judge Rubini on Friday, November 7th. That, nobody will ever cross a bridge in this country as far as I'm concerned. That'll be more patriotic than that bridge named after, you know, Larry Rubini, Colonel Rubini, you know. Jennifer, you're a dear friend. You do a great, great job. I don't know if anybody could fill the shoes of General Washington, Frank Lyons, who's, I think Frank may be the colonel in the Marble Soldiers, but I do know that he's a 130 pilot in Vietnam. Judge Larry Rubini, Iraq, Afghanistan veteran. What you do up there, you got pretty big shoes to fill, my friend. And I don't know if anybody could do it any better than what you do. By the way, we had on a friend of yours, Alex Robb, a couple weeks ago, and I thought it was so important that you were under the weather, so we had Rob on, but we wanted to have you on because you're the lady that makes all that magic happen and get them dorm boats out of the barn and get them across the river and back over the river. And you just, it wouldn't be Christmas if we didn't have you on, and we want to say thank you.
Well, I appreciate that, Joe. I want to thank you for being here and giving me an opportunity to share with your followers the importance of the event. I mean, you're speaking so well about it, but I would really call upon our community, if you haven't seen it, if you haven't been a part of the event, we do it the second Sunday in every December, and we do it on Christmas Day. And I think it's important, Joe, that you mentioned that there's a lot of veterans that are involved with the park as volunteers, as reenactors. I think that there's something really special about the fact that they feel so connected to this history, and they're so active in preserving it. We have a lot of guys that are active military that are still involved, So I think it's a really special event. I definitely want to say I could not do it alone. We have over 500 active volunteers, and so many of them, like you mentioned, Frank Lyons, who was a past board member, Colonel of the Marblehead Regiment. If people like him, like John, who portrays Washington, like Larry, were not doing what they were doing and volunteering their time and support, we'd never be able to do it alone. It takes a village, and I'm fortunate to have a village of dedicated individuals and some fantastically dedicated veterans.
If you have a Christmas tree in your house and it's decorated with 1,000 different kind of Christmas balls, different shapes, different colors, different sizes, when you're up at Bucks County for the Washington Cross in the Delaware, it's like looking at a Christmas tree of people with different color uniforms, different sizes of muskets, different hats, but they all wore their uniforms, whether they were from Maryland, Ohio, Pennsylvania, wherever they came from around the country that was in existence to help fight. And I really believe, Jennifer, that a lot of those veterans, like myself, that crossed the Delaware, really wish they were crossing it with General Washington 200 years ago. I think they go back to that moment, and I think they would have been there that day. I know Bill would have been there that day. I would have been there that day 200 years ago. Pay or no pay, we've been there fighting for the country. And they're the kind of people that you attract to Bucks County. And we just wanted to say thank you. And we're very proud of the fact that during the pandemic, we used our show a few times to do the reenactment of Washington crossing the Delaware on our show, just so people wouldn't be without something that year. And we're always appreciative of General Washington and Ron, you and Larry Rubini and Frank Lyons and everyone else, Fife and Drum Corps and all that, for letting us do that. And once again, it's just as nice to visit Bucks County, the Friends of Bucks County, in the summertime too, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the park, like you said, it's the reenactment is super special. And Joe, I want to thank you again for sharing that and being part of this legacy. But it's great all year long. We host just under 1 million visitors each year. Like I said, we do a fantastic Memorial
Day. Yeah, but wait a minute. Okay, so you get $50 million in grants. What's a big deal?
Yeah, I don't, Joe, I don't get $50 million in grants.
Wait a minute. Williamsburg hosts the same amount of people, and they get $150 million a year. You must get 50.
Joe, we operate, our budget's about $1.5 million on the Friends Group end, $1.5 million on the state end, who we partner with. So, you know, we're certainly making good use of our dollars, right? Most of the organization is funded through private philanthropy. We're very fortunate to have some great foundations in the area, donors, members. It really is our community that powers the park. I always tell people that as funders, visitors, ambassadors, our community is powering the site.
Bill, don't you think a place that our country really did the turn of winning the Revolutionary War and becoming an independent country away from Britain? Don't you think people should be dumping money there like crazy to preserve that area?
At the end of the year, it'd be a good place to dump some charity money.
You know, give a number, Jennifer, if you have it handy, where people can call and make a contribution. And I'm not talking about the people with $5 and $10. I'm talking about the big corporations, Coca-Cola, Pepsi, General Electric, millions of dollars a week salary. They're getting it on account of what that Continental Army, what them soldiers, men and women and children did to cross that Delaware for our freedom. So give a number where people can. And I know some of these guys that own these big corporations. You know, write 6- and 7-figure checks. Don't send a check for $10. Come on. This is what I'll say, Joe.
You can do anything like that on our website, WashingtonCrossingPark.org. You can also contact me directly. My contact information is on the site. And I will say that with the 250 coming up next year, we're doing several millions of dollars of site improvements. all of which will provide free enhancements for our community. We're redoing our intro film. We're actually building a full-size Durham boat that people can climb into and get a sense of what that night was like. So I definitely think that we're a site worth investing in. And in thinking about the 250th, which is just, you know, a few weeks away, this is a time to think about how we're going to preserve this site and legacy for the next 250 years. I do think we're a site worth investing
in,
for sure.
And we want to be part of whatever you're doing next year. Just call us and we'll be there. We'll promote it, whatever we got to do. We're going to be doing the Flags of Liberty, Bill. I think it's May 22nd, 2026. We're going to be, I'm looking for 400 flags, of casket flags. We're going to be opening up. We got the Sanjour flag that's traveling around. It's back in the United States now, but it flew 3 days at 26 veteran cemeteries in 10 countries. It's back on American soil. And Bill, it's going to be in your hometown on May 22nd. Wow. God, we got to find a way. We got to find a way of getting George Washington to come down, maybe in a Durham boat, and put that on display. Bill, that would be cool, wouldn't it?
They could do that. The beach patrol certainly would help with moving the boat.
Maybe we could do something tie in Bucks County and with the 250th birthday when we're unfolding. And these flags are going to go 16 football fields down the boardwalk. I think Bucks County. I think you got to be part of this. You know. Maybe there's a way we can... Don't you have a miniature Durham boat that you take in parades and all?
Yeah, so it's I wouldn't say miniature. It's definitely smaller, but it's still about 45 feet, so...
Oh, yeah, I wouldn't want to have to pick it up.
You just did maybe 250.
Yeah. We'll be in touch with you, and we would love for you to be part of it, okay?
Oh, I'd love that, Joe. Definitely reach out. Let's talk about it.
Yeah, and Karen, God bless you. We talk 10 times a week.
Me too.
Sometimes when veterans are in crisis, 10 times a day. Thank you. And how is my friend Dr. Kelly doing?
So he's doing well, sir. Covered for me for a couple of days. But can I, Joe, ask one thing?
Whatever you want to do. Whatever
to your audience. This is a time of joy for so many people, but it's also a time of pain and anxiety for many veterans. So keep close to the veterans. Keep an eye on every veteran. Check on your neighbors. Check to see how they're doing. And if they need anything, please reach out. Please have everybody reach out to us. We will figure out whatever we need to do. I always am a little careful, very careful around the holiday time frame for keeping a close eye on the veterans.
Listen. You know, God bless you, Admiral. You know we love you, and you do a great, great job. And just thank you for all that you do and all your service.
Of course. Thank you, Joe.
And Jennifer.
Thank you very, very much.
We'll be talking to you guys, and we got to go to a break. And we're going to bring up Santa Claus, a Vietnam veteran Santa Claus, to kind of close our show. And another guy, Rodney Little, who hopefully we get Rodney on the phone. He doesn't like it when we brag about him, but... Rodney this week gave away 2,500 brand new coats. Bill, they came 12 in a box. 3 small, 3 medium, 3 large, 3 extra large, and Rodney gave out 2,500 coats, I think, between Philadelphia and Delaware. You're listening to the Welcome Home Show. We'll be right back.
Welcome back, everybody, as we always do, today being Sunday, December 21st. We announced the birthdays and the casualties on the Vietnam Memorial Wall in Washington, D.C., Wildwood, New Jersey, and numerous other locations throughout the country. Today, there'll be 160 birthdays, 4 of those from New Jersey. Casualties, 159, and 3 from New Jersey. A couple local young men, Bernard J. Moran, Jr., United States Marine Corps. He was career. He was born December 25th, 1937, and he died December 12th, 1971. I'm sure Christmas in December is not the same for that family. He was from Philadelphia, but his wife and 2 daughters lived in North Wildwood, and they're still very active in the North Wildwood community. He'll be 33 forever. Bruce M. Miley, United States Army, born December 20th, 1946. He died October 21st, 1968. He was from Ocean City, and his name is on the American Legion Post 524. He was 21. Robert A. Woodrow, United States Army, born December 20th, 1946. He died July 4th, 1967. So two holidays were affected there. He was from Ocean City, is a Bronze Star recipient, and he'll be 20 forever. A very unique Vietnam casualty, Daniel Bullock, born December 21st, 1953, died June 7th, 1969. He's from Philadelphia. He's the youngest casualty from the Republic of Vietnam. He was in the Marine Corps. He was just 15 years old.
Bill, he actually went to the Vietnam. He celebrated his 15th birthday.
Yeah, something slipped through the cracks there. He should be in his very early 70s.
And
right
you know,
now.
He was a black fella, young guy. Mm-hmm. They didn't put a marker on his grave because the government didn't want to know anybody that they sent a 14-year-old kid to Vietnam and he died. You know why he died? In a firefight.
Yeah.
He was carrying ammo for the mortar tubes.
Yeah, he was an infantryman. One other World War II veteran that has a local connection to the Wildwood area, Benjamin B. Cummings. He was born January 16, 1924, and he died December 23, 1944. He was in World War II. He was living in Wildwood Crest at the time with his wife and son. His wife was my fifth grade teacher at Glenwood Avenue Elementary School. He was in the United States Air Corps, and he'll be 20 forever. And I just want to say, last week, Joe and I were at the reefs across America. We helped put out about 1,500 reefs. It was a great day, and it was throughout the country. It went well. The sad part is no county commissioners for about the 10th year in a row found time to go there and honor the veterans. And that's just a shame that government officials don't have enough concern about the veterans.
That's sad.
It is. It is very sad.
But anyway, now we go to the opposite. Mr. Little, are you with us?
Yes, I am, Joe. How are you?
Not bad. This guy is one of my heroes. I love talking to this guy. Rodney, how many coats did you give away this week for Christmas to people that were in
every
need?
Every bit of 2,500 that our good friend Dave Scarletti sent me.
And
from Ocean State Job Lot.
From Job Lots. And, I mean, he does these kind of wonderful things. I mean, box springs and mattresses last year at the chapel. I think 300 sets of box springs and mattresses. 2 years ago, you and I were at the stand down in Philadelphia in the courtyard, and there's boxes and boxes of bicycles. Brand new bikes.
Yes. He doesn't stop. He's relentless when it comes to our veterans, men and women who serve. And, so unfortunate that, you know, all year long, we got veterans living on the streets. You know, it's just a crying shame, Joe. So, you know, in terms of putting out the call, hey, Dave stepped up to the plate and made sure that some of these veterans on the streets and veterans just around the state get coats to stay warm.
And even if they have a house with the heating bills, they need a coat to wear in the house because it's colder in the house than it is outside.
Absolutely. Now, especially in this
case. So how many, so you get a tractor trailer coach, what are they on, 24, 22 pallets?
Yeah, well, actually it was more, I think it was about 22 pallets, Joe, you're probably right. It's about 212 boxes, about 22 pallets.
Now, how are the coach packed?
Well, they come 12 in a box, so all packed up, you know, and on the side of the box it has, you know, every size, two smalls, two mediums, two large, two extra large, and then some boxes have two mediums, two large, two extra large, and two extra extra larges. So all total inside the box is 12 coats.
All different colors?
Name brand coats. All different colors. You know, each box have different colors, from purple to white. You know, and the men's coats are you know, unisex. You know, and then he also, you know, threw in a female box coat that is also unisex.
Ronnie, am I safe saying that if Joe Griffey goes into a store and I buy a coat and I either wear it out or I put it in the bag and walk out. So I bought a coat. But when you give a coat to a poor person that's cold, what's the reaction they have?
Man, Joe, just smiles. The continuous thank you so much. I mean, it's a sad commentary, but it's a happy commentary when it comes to the happiness, that the smiles that we put on their face, you know, staying warm. Last year, Dave sent me buckets, and in the buckets they had coats, soap, you know, warm gloves, electric warm hat, you know, but you have to put batteries in it, and deodorant. He had everything packed inside that container, so those that are living out in inclement weather, cold, it could stay dry, you know, inside that. They can sit on the bucket. I mean, he just thinks of everything. I mean, from razor blades to shave. I mean, he tries to make sure that, you know, they're well taken care of, even though they're living on the streets. And the impact that Dover Air Force Base contributes, some, you know, they gave us some space to have the tractor trailer come on military base and drop that load off. It just so phenomenal, because Dover Air Force Base stepped up to the plate and assist us in giving us some space so that we can create, you know, the distribution plan, which we already had in place for folks to register for the coat. And then we go up and down Delaware, Pennsylvania, giving out the coat.
Now, a couple things. Number one, we want to wish Merry Christmas to the military basketball, all the players, Mike Myers, Angel.
Yeah. Thank you.
And our good friend Rita Chappelle. She makes a lot of this happen. You know?
Yes, Rita's amazing. Rita is out here helping and assisting, giving these coats out as well. So I did get her, you know, to come out. And well, she always going to come out anyway, Joe. You know how Rita is.
Yeah.
You know, participating. She's going to all make sure that she take care of our veteran men and women all across the state, Delaware, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania, impacting, you know, their safety and making sure that they warm through this inclement weather.
Sergeant Major Rodney L. Little.
Yes.
I know you, the responding special trust and confidence in your knowledge, integrity, prudence, and ability we have constituted and appointed, and by these present do constitute appoint you to be appointed a commissioner of the Delaware Commission of Veterans Affairs to serve a term to expire November 20th, 2029. And this was signed by some guy by claims to be the mayor of Delaware. So not too shabby. And
Governor Myers.
Governor Myers, Matt Myers, and he also is a very good friend of Governor Mikey Sherrill.
Yeah, and Joe, it is indeed an honor and a privilege to be able to just sit on that commission and continue the work that is so passionate to all of us veterans, such as yourself, the things that you go and do above and beyond to make sure that our veterans are getting the quality of life care that they so rightly deserve.
And there's a lot of vets, Bill, and a lot of guys are out there doing that, Rodney.
Yeah, absolutely.
We can't do it alone. It's too big to do it alone.
Right. Those are the unsung heroes. You know, it's just in us. And like I said, none of us are getting paid for it, and we don't care about that. We just want to make sure that, you know, these folks are taken care of. You know what I'm saying?
Rodney, we just had the director of the Delaware River, I mean, Bucks County Crossing, where Washington is, and the Continental Army didn't get paid.
Uh-huh.
Man, how much love did they have for Washington that they would risk their lives to fight for nothing, for no paycheck? Mm. And, Bill, I'm sure a lot of them didn't get paid after the war.
No, and they probably didn't get any recognition because there was no veterans organizations or ways of getting together. Of course, some did start there, but they had a free. I wish they all could have been here today to look back and see the free country we do have, and make sure that it stays free.
But Rodney, stay with us. We do this the end of every year, and Bill, you and your family. Bill's daughter was just appointed the Attorney General in New Jersey, which is a really, really big job, and And Bill, if you want to take 30 seconds and thank your family and Merry Christmas. And
yeah, Dale, I want to thank everybody, my wife, my daughter, two grandkids, the extended family. I had lunch with my brother the other day. He's going back to Florida. It's just good to have family for this time of year. And I've been calling as many friends as I can to make sure that they know they're not forgotten about. We have all of our veterans groups make sure they reach out to our members who can't make it to meetings anymore. So I just want to thank everybody. And I want to thank the governor-elect for Cheryl for nominating my daughter. They're going to be a great working partnership. There's no doubt about that for the next few years.
Well, it's more important she appointed her.
Yes.
That's more important. Yeah. And Rodney, take a minute and thank your family.
Well, I just want to make sure that I thank, you know, my entire family, from, you know, my children to the wife to the family, friends, my colleagues, the veterans, everybody. I just wish them a happy holiday season, that God will continue to bless each and every one, you know, especially those who serve.
And I wouldn't do this if my wife Colleen wasn't involved. And I want to thank her and love her. And yeah, we want to thank all the people here. Logan, thank you for all that you do. And I don't know many people could do what Logan does in a two-hour radio show with all the crap we throw at them to get done. And we want to thank Rick Brackador and his wife and Brett and everybody that works here at the station. I read this every year, and it's probably the most important thing that I do all year long. It was the night before Christmas. He lived all alone in a one-bedroom house made of plaster and stone. I come down the chimney with presents to give and to see just who in this home did live. I looked all about, a strange sight I did see. No tinsel, no presents, not even a tree. No stockings by mantle, just boots filled with sand. On the wall hung pictures of a far distant land, with medals and badges, awards of all kinds. A sober thought came through my mind. For this house was different, it was dark and dreary. I found the home of a soldier, once I could see clearly. The soldier lay sleeping, silent, alone, curled on the floor in this one-bedroom home. The face was so gentle, the room in such disorder. Not how I pictured a United States soldier. Was this the hero of whom I just read, curled up in a poncho, the floor for a bed? I realized this family that I saw this night owed their lives to these soldiers who were willing to fight. Soon around the world, the children would play, and grown-ups would celebrate a bright Christmas day. They all enjoyed freedom each month of the year because of the soldier, like the one lying here. I couldn't help wonder how many lay alone on a cold Christmas Eve in a land far from home. The very thought brought a tear to my eye. I dropped to my knee and started to cry. The soldier awakened, and I heard a rough voice. Santa, don't cry. This life is my choice. I fight for freedom. I don't ask for more. My life is my God, my country, my core. These soldiers rolled over and soon drifted to sleep. I couldn't control it. I continued to weep. I kept watch for hours, so silent and still, and we both shivered from a cold night's chill. I didn't want to leave on that cold, dark night, this guardian of honor so willing to fight. Then the soldier rolled over with a voice soft and pure, whispered, carried on Santa, it's Christmas Day, all was secure. One look at my watch, and I knew he was right. Merry Christmas, my friends, and to all good night.